This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
It's one thing to walk into court knowing you've got a tough case. It's another to watch every single legal strategy you've planned get shut down before trial even begins. That's exactly where Brian Koberger's defense team is right now. Motions to suppress? Denied. Motions to dismiss the indictment? Denied. Motion to take the death penalty off the table? Also denied. At this point, their legal playbook is looking thinner than, you know, an airline napkin or the now non-existent SkyMall. So with every major piece of evidence locked in and the prosecution not missing a single legal step, what does a defense attorney even do at this point? How do you create doubt when the jury is going to hear about the DNA, phone data, and surveillance footage tying your client to the crime? Bob Mata, defense attorney, joining us to discuss all of this and the latest events here in the Brian Koberger case. Bob, you've defended tough cases. When you're sitting in Koberger's defense chair right now, looking at the stack of admissible evidence and a death-qualified jury and no prosecutorial wins, what is your next move?
Defend the case.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a look. Is a defense, you lose motions to suppress way more frequently than you win them. So Ann Taylor was not surprised. You know, I think that she probably thought that she put forth some good motions, had some valid arguments. You know, if down the road they believe that the judge ruled improperly on the law, then, you know, it gets taken up on appeal if he's convicted. So, you know, if you're Ann Taylor and you're like, all right, like you're assuming you're going to lose him, mm-hmm. is what I'm saying.
Sure.
You're not thinking that you're going into the case where you've stripped the state from all the evidence.
No.
You know, you're going into that case. You're making your record. You're filing the required requisite motions to suppress to preserve those issues for appeal. And, you know, those, like I said, will come down the pike, down the road sometime. Mm-hmm. Like I've been on the record that I think that the IgG aspect of this, if Koberger is convicted, is going to be an issue that's going to make its way up to the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. because we need the big court, the high court, to sound off on it.
We need a definition.
Yeah. We do, and we need parameters. We need to know from the highest court in the land, where it becomes the law of the land, what the cops need to do in order to be able to use that, you know, because they like to just call it, you know, it's a tip, you know, it's a tool. It's more than that, you know, and the fact that you share DNA with your relatives, because right now where it stands with that stuff, and I know I've gone a little far afield from your question, but, you know, where it stands right now in the law is that you don't even have standing in terms of being able to attack it if they've gotten a match from a distant relative's DNA, mm-hmm. because you share that DNA. They're like, oh, well, you know, this is a cousin fifth removed from you, but we're able to make the family tree and it leads back to you. So we got to you. You don't have the standing to challenge that at this point, because it's not your DNA per se, even though you share the DNA. So that's to me where the real argument's going to lie, because it's well settled that, Tony, if you went into, say, a restaurant and you had a nice glass of iced tea and, you know, you had your mouth all over it and your hands all over it, and you left that restaurant and the feds are sitting on that restaurant or law enforcement's at that restaurant. After you dip out, they creep in there and say, hey, we're going to need to take that glass. They drop it into you've abandoned that DNA. So mm-hmm. you no longer have a privacy interest in it. It's not the same thing with DNA. That is not the equivalent of DNA. DNA, you're not abandoning it. You know, it's not a thing. Like if you share your DNA with a distant relative, I think personally that there's a privacy interest in that. And I'm not suggesting that law enforcement not be able to use it anymore. What I'm suggesting is go get a goddamn warrant, mm-hmm. that it can't be a fishing expedition. We don't want law enforcement being able to dig into all of us with the thing that tells the government more about us than anything on the planet, which is our DNA, you know, without them having a warrant. It can't be the beginning of their investigation. It like go in with a little probable cause, get the warrant, say, all right, this is what we got, and just have the judge say, all right, I think that that's sufficient. Go ahead, do what you're going to do with the IgG stuff. So, you know, if he's convicted, I think they'll go down the road. But in terms of being Ann Taylor sitting in it, you're going to have to do what most defense attorneys have to do at a trial, and you're going to have to try to pick apart piece by piece everything that the state's going to be putting on in that case. You know, you got to look at it. You look at it globally, but the attack is piece by piece. You look at it like, all right, we got the touch DNA on the sheath. I think that all of us in this defense room, in terms of our team, would agree that that is probably the most damning piece of evidence they have. It's coming in. How do we attack it? You know, and then you formulate how you're going to attack it. And the easiest attack on touch DNA is it's super easy to leave touch DNA. So you're saying, okay, well, the transfer of touch DNA, we'll be able to establish that that's, you know, that's not real damning evidence. The question that we have to answer is, how did Brian Koberger's DNA end up on that sheath, even if it was easy to do, right? You know, if it's not him being in that house, at what point was he close enough or in possession of that sheath that his DNA could have been on it, that it's explainable to a jury? Yeah. And, you know, I mean, to me, I hear people like, touch DNA, shit evidence. And it can be very, very challenging for the state to win a case strictly on touch DNA, depending on what the situation is. It's a case by case analysis with that stuff. You know, I mean, if you've got something where, you know, this knife sheath was bought at a Walmart and it was the floor model and 500 people have touched it, you know, and that's something that you're dealing with. You're like, well, this thing was out for public consumption. You can't trust that the person that they found the DNA from that person on that sheath, where it was accessible by so many people, that makes them the killer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, but when you have a situation where you got a single source DNA profile and it's found at the crime scene, it becomes more difficult to think of a way that yeah. may have happened where Brian Koberger didn't have that in his possession. So, like, I'm spending an awful lot of time, if I'm Ann Taylor, trying to craft a theory as to how that may have happened that's plausible to a jury.
And that's the thing. I mean, if you were to look at this, because the thing is, it's going to be a lot of the same arguments that they were making of what they wanted excluded from court, but now it's in court when the trial starts. And they can't be arguing, well, they shouldn't be in court to begin with anymore because it's been allowed in. So that's not going to be on the table, correct? She can't sit there and be correct. Like, well, we don't believe. Now she has to actually argue the merits of the touch DNA, which the science, it's pretty solid. I mean, I don't know where it's very questionable. It's not like this could possibly be someone else. Once they narrow it down and once they did get that statistical match, once they did do the warrant, once they swabbed Koberger, matched it to the touch DNA, I'm like, yep, that's him, because there's no more people in the world that could possibly it could be, because there's not that many people out there. We know it's his DNA on the knife sheath. That doesn't seem to be very much in question. Are they going to try, and how could they try to say that? I mean, are they going to go down that road that it could be somebody else's DNA? Is that even a possibility? And then we'll get to the other situations of, well, it was the floor model at Kmart.
Right. Well, I mean, no, they're not, because yeah. And kind of what the state was saying in terms of the resistance to turning over the IgG data, it was that, look, we have Koberger's DNA and profile. Like, we're not introducing the IgG shit. We have a direct match from the sample that we got from Koberger, and that's what we matched to the profile on the sheath. Mm-hmm. So like the state was always saying, we're never bringing the IgG shit in because we don't need to. We don't need to go down the family tree thing because we got the dude's DNA.
Yeah.
So like you were saying, I mean, it's his DNA. Like, mm-hmm. they can put an expert on to try to argue that it's not, but that is the gold standard of evidence for juries.
Yeah.
so they are going. That's what I'm saying, man. Their biggest challenge right now is to come up with a plausible explanation that does not include Brian Koberger being in that house murdering those four people that night as to why his DNA ended up on that sheath.
Well, another big piece that they were trying to argue that they shouldn't be looking at, which tells me there's probably something there, is the Amazon search history. And there was a couple other search histories as well and purchase histories. One would start to wonder, okay, we're going after Amazon. We don't want to see this purchase history. Why would that be? Like, what's on that purchase history? And if we end up seeing a K-bar knife and sheath on there, is it kind of case over?
Look, the best argument for the defense in that scenario is that they don't have the weapon. You know, so that
they have the sheath, though. I mean, they don't have the weapon.
I get it.
But you got the sheath. And if the sheath matches up to the same one that would have come with that model, again, just because I don't believe we have that, do we? We don't have a purchase history stating he bought a Kobar knife, correct?
Well, we don't know.
We don't know yet. It's just nothing that's come out there. I know that's been speculated on.
Well, Coffendaffer flat out said it on the Dateline thing that somebody leaked it to her.
Mm-hmm.
That the search history is showing that he bought it on Amazon.
That's where we've heard it. It's an allegation at this moment.
Still. Correct. It was on Dateline, and I'm like, whoa, like that's big. Like somebody broke the gag. To me, that's game over.
Yeah.
If you've got him buying it on the Amazon, on Amazon, and it's like as soon as I heard about the K-bar and the sheath, I mean, I went on Google immediately. Mm-hmm. I found the exact same sheath and K-bar knife, and it's a set. It's got the Marine Corps logo on it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the exact same thing. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, I mean, this is not it. Cause I was like, all right, well, is this something that's like issued by the Marines or, you know, like going into the search, I'm like, you know, is this like a difficult thing to get your hands on? And it's not.
No.
The question then becomes this guy who's getting his whatever, I think he was getting his PhD in criminology, right? Is that what he was doing? How fucking stupid do you need to be? You know, you're going to go and commit these fucking horrific murders. You know, you're a criminology guy and you're going to leave a paper trail with Amazon.
Yeah.
That you bought the fucking knife, I guess you'd have to think, well, certainly he didn't anticipate that he'd be stupid enough to accidentally leave the sheath at the crime scene.
Yes.
What I mean? He's like thinking, all right, I'm going to buy this thing. There's not going to be any trace of it. They're never going to get to me.
And that's where I think Koberger's narcissism would come into play, where it's like, I could never, fail this. I could never be, something could not go wrong. This is going to go smoothly. I believe it is because I'm so detailed and da da da. And that's where the idiocy comes in, where it's, no, you're not that smart. You may think you are. You think you're better than everybody else in the room. You think you can talk to people this way or treat people this way, just the pattern that we've seen in him. And it's like, oh, well, this explains that. He thought he was going to be able to get away with this and there'd be no worry for looking at that search history. Where I believe he's a very smart guy in some areas, but then when it comes to like social constructs, I don't think he has any freaking clue there.
Oh my God. He's got no ability to be able to operate in society mm-hmm. as a normal person.
No.
Like, I mean, that's just evident. Like, you know, from the interviews you've heard of people that have had, any kind of interactions with them, whether it be girls that went on a Tinder date on with her or students that were in his class, who's like, he's a fucking weirdo and he's mean. And, all the things you hear about him are just like the guy just did not know how to function like a normal human being when he's around other people.
Mm-hmm.
And, and that's kind of like adds up, right?
It makes sense.
You hear the white snow thing, that thing that he wrote up talking about this thing he has. I'm like, This guy kind of sounds like the dude.
In his mind, he thinks he's being under the radar on so many of these things, but it's so obvious to anyone that he's not. And that's the problem. But that's a problem with a lot of folks that are like that, that are not murderers. You can just tell, like, they, you know, think you're kind of being, but you're not. I mean, everyone can tell what's going on here. And that's where I think it all falls apart for Koberger. So you have the DNA is staying in, the cell phone tracking data is staying in. Pretty much everything is staying in. Nothing is going out. So now they're going to have to try and argue all of these points. I get, you know, going to try and argue the floor model, maybe. I mean, I guess, but if you got it on your Amazon receipts, that doesn't go very far for you. You know, it's just, where do you go? I mean, can you argue the cell data, the pinging of it? I know it's like, yes, there's multiple towers, and yes, it does cover a certain distance. People will be surprised how small of a distance each tower actually covers. I think if you really look at it, you got that. God knows what else they have on the digital footprint. I'm assuming they're going to have some GPS information from his phone as well that will probably further corroborate the pinging as far as more of an exact location as to where he was at, other than when the phone's off. What do you got here? I mean, what else do they have to try and argue this other than he likes to look at the stars?
Yeah, I like, in terms of the night of, remember, they put forth that they've got an alibi. Right?
Yeah, he likes to look at the stars.
Right, he's a big stargazer guy. He takes those late night creepy drives out there because that's what he likes to do. And you know, so like, I'm assuming the night of, and if I'm Koberger and I'm like kind of trying to create this narrative leading up to me doing this thing, you know, like for months leading up to it, I'm going to do exactly that. I'm going to go out and drive. I'm going to establish that I do this. It's my habit. I enjoy it. I get to think. I like being alone. There's nobody driving, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm Koberger, I'm driving out to this forested area and I'm fucking leaving my phone there. Like literally, so that it tracks while I'm there. So that it, like, if a signal can pick it up, it'll pick it up as me being in that area at the time that the state thinks the murders took place.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then I'm driving to the area doing the deed. You know, and then I'm leaving, you know, and it's like, and then I'm going and scooping my phone, and then it's back on the grid. And, you know, so like, I don't know that the night of phone data is going to be as powerful as the state thinks it's going to be, depending on what they have. And again, I have no fucking clue what they have other than what we've heard. I think that it's really powerful circumstantial evidence, the 12 occasions that he happened to be creeping around that residence. I think it's powerful evidence if they are able to put him around King Road the following morning after his stupid ass remembered or figured out that he forgot the fucking sheath.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh my God, like I gotta drive up. Like, cause I, like, my hypothesis on that was, okay, he realized at some point he didn't have the sheath anymore during the course of the night over the next few hours.
Yeah.
I don't have the sheath. You know, like can you imagine that realization at that moment? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Because you know, he like clearly didn't, if it's him, he didn't realize it when he's walking out of the place. Like, he just, like, it's your mind's going a million miles an hour. You've just committed four horrific murders. If he's the sick fuck that we think that he might be, like, he's probably exhilarated. You know, he's not thinking of it in a way that a normal person would be, like, oh my God, what did I do? He's probably walking around with a raging heart on like a fucking freak. And, you know, I mean, who knows what's going on in his head? Whatever it is, it's not making sure that he's got all his shit with him.
No.
You know, so when he figures that out. So, I mean, in my estimation, you know, I mean, there's two arguments you can make. You could be like, oh, he's that guy that creeps by the crime scene just to relive it, and because he wants to see what's going on over there. You know, you hear about killers doing that, mm-hmm, a lot. Or he's hoping that the girl that was still in there that may have seen him, and I don't know if he saw her back. It would seem like he would have had to. that she's sleeping. And if law enforcement's not there, do I creep back in to get that fucking thing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you would have to really, really be contemplating getting back in that house to go get that goddamn thing if you left it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're like everything that you planned, everything that you did in terms of preparing for this night has been shot to shit mm-hmm. because you left that sheath in there. So no one's ever going to convince me that he wasn't there contemplating getting back into that house to go grab that thing.
Sure.
So like, to me, that's very powerful evidence. You know, like, I mean, depending on what the exact story is behind the, you know, what the alibi is, you know, I mean, like, I mean, look, the defense is going to have things to argue. You know, we know that there were two other male blood DNA sources that were found at the house. We got the one on the railing. We got the one in the glove. You know, I mean, those can be powerful pieces of evidence for the defense to try to sow reasonable doubt. You know, I mean,
when they got nothing else, I mean, I don't think they're super powerful when you really look at them in context, but it's something.
It's something. I mean, you know, I mean, you, like, obviously the counter argument to that, you know, is that it's a party house.
Dude. Yeah.
You know, it's like some dude who just blasted a rail of blow and does way too much of it, got a bloody nose when he was
A hangnail and you're holding onto a railing, or you, again, you have a hangnail, or you have a cut on your fingers, which any of us do at any given time, usually, and you put on a glove and that glove has your DNA in it. Or just go, I mean, you know what it's like. You live in Chicago. You go walking around anytime in winter, go for a block, you're going to find three gloves and a hat on the road or on the sidewalk just because people drop that shit. So it's not like, ooh, a glove.
I mean, like, and that's what they could be the pushback from the state on that. You know, like, I mean, look, it's a college house. There's a lot of people in and out of it. It is flat out a party house.
Yeah.
Like, that is established. And it is cold as fuck in Idaho in the winter, mm-hmm. and every single human being wears gloves. So, you know, depending on the amount of blood, if we're talking about, like it all boils down to, like, we're hearing, like, broad strokes of what the evidence is. You know, I mean, like, to say we don't know, the only thing that I'll say about the sheath DNA is at this point, I mean, we know that Othram did it, and Othram's a phenomenal lab, is that we don't know the quality of it, right? We know that it's there. We know that the state is claiming that their lab has made the match. I mean, they're going to attack the match. Mm-hmm. They're going to say it's a shit sample, that there's not enough matches on the loci for it to be, it shouldn't even be admissible in court. It's like, it's just shit DNA sample. I mean, I imagine that's where it's going to
Will they use that technical term? It's a shit sample, Your Honor.
Right.
This is just a shit sample.
Hey, man, they've gotten a lot more lax these days in courtrooms. You hear more F-bombs in courtrooms, you know, always under the guise that this is what somebody said than you ever used to. You know?
It's like, Your Honor, Mr. Leahy here says it's a shit sample.
Hey, everything that guy just said is fucking bullshit. So it's, you know, I mean, look, man, you got to pick it apart one piece at a time. And, you know, I mean, she's mounting a defense. She's going to have witnesses on. You know, I mean, do you call Koberger? Not a fucking chance. You put that guy on there? No way.
Do you put him on at the last minute if you know it's doomed?
Look, it's a death penalty case. There's zero I always try to explain to people. I mean, there's absolutely zero chance he's pleading out because you have nothing to lose by going to trial on a death penalty case. I mean, they're offering you nothing, and your fate is death.
Yeah.
So you're going to try to fight it. You know, there's zero chances he's ever pleading out. And, you know, I mean, he could, like, he's certainly appears to be a narcissistic guy. Absolutely could be like a mini Murdoch and think that he's going to be able to go out there and Svengoolie the shit out of it and and convince these jurors that it wasn't him. You know, like I'm an unusual guy. I enjoy evening drives.
Do you use that to your advantage? Do you put him on the stand and then trigger him? Like, look at these hot women. None of these women will ever sleep with you. And then just get his reaction. just
get like a smoke show prosecutor, you know, to like really get him like worked up on the stand, you know, do some kind of some trickery. I mean, we kid, but you know, it's a tough case for the defense. It is.
Yeah.
I know that there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, like thinking he's not the guy, and you have to wait until trial. There is no question about it. The evidence, we have not seen it vetted.
Nope.
You know, I am a defense attorney and through and through, and he is alleged to have done this. He is presumed innocent at this point, and we have to vet all the evidence. It's just, you know, like any human being, when you move yourself out of the attorney role, which is impossible to do, but you're looking at it just when I look at Richard Allen probable cause affidavit and what they had and the evidence that they had, and I compare it to what they appear to have against Koberger. One leaned innocent to me, one leaned guilty. When I look at Huerman, fucking thing leans guilty as shit.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like they, you know, you can tell when law enforcement's done the job. And look, the law enforcement's going to get peppered in the Koberger case. They're going to get hammered. You know, you hear about all kinds of shit they fucked up and did wrong, and you're going to hear about all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Is any of that going to overcome the fact that he left a sheath with his DNA under one of the bodies of the girls? And to me, that's the beginning, the middle, and the end of the case. Like, it's going to be really, really tough to get over that. I don't care what the argument is. And I'm not saying it from a perspective of anything other than I know the impact that kind of evidence has on juries.
Yeah.
Period.
And it's certainly going to have its impact.
Indeed.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.